Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, and this is 15, 16 straight months of this show. 65 hours. It's a book in itself. I hope you're getting to the website when you have the time to do that in your busy life. And I think you notice what I do on this show is I swing in and out of philosophy, theology, and then I get to the science. I get to the practical things. Because health is all of those things combined. You can't just look at it from one vantage point or you will lose. Most importantly, and we're not going to get on this today, but it's a spiritual journey. For the doctor included, and I hope you're getting a sense of that also. So welcome. We're going to do part two of what we started last week. Pharmaceutical drugs. We're going to get to recreational drugs. And the reason I'm going to do it is not because, you know, people listen to a show on pharmaceutical drugs and they say, well, yes, big deal. I know the drugs are bad for me. That's not why I do the show, thinking that you haven't heard that before. I do these shows the way I do them to bring more depth to you. Depth. We know and we know and we know and we know and we know. It's like marriage, right? On your wedding day, you understood love. 5 years later, you understood love. 10 years later, you understood love. And 50 years later, you understood love. When a 20-year-old is talking about his wife or husband and they're newly married, they're speaking a very different language than if someone that's been married to somebody for 50 or 60 years. Now, we can appreciate that. And the point is the depth that you bring to that topic is the difference between survival or failure when the rubber hits the road. And this is the point about pharmaceutical drugs. Yes, you understand that they're not that good for you. Go tell that to your MD when he looks at you in the big white coat and says you're out of your mind. You'll die if you go off these pharmaceutical drugs. You see, when you get tested, you better have a deeper understanding. And that's why I'm going into the science today, and you're going to take it. Well, I'm going to make it easy for you so it's easy to take it. I'm going to make it technical for you, but I've got that ability to turn that technical stuff into something palatable for you. And the reason I'm doing this, again, is because you can really get a sense of how, in the depth of yourself, what's going on. When we say drugs are toxic to the liver, when we say drugs are toxic to the kidney, so what does that mean? What does it mean when a drug is toxic to the liver? Well, again, we all know. I hope by now you know. And if you don't know, get on straighttalk.cc. That's the website. And listen to the shows about the liver so you understand. The liver does two things in a nutshell. It's like a big vacuum cleaner. It sucks all the poisons, like the drugs, after they've been metabolized. After the drug has hit your cell and done to the cell what that drug is supposed to do. That doesn't matter where. That could be your brain. It could be your liver. It could be your kidney. But once it goes to the liver, the liver's job then is to take it apart. And the liver can take it apart in hundreds of different ways that we don't have to get into. As the liver's taking it apart, it's going to take it and dump it into these passageways, like in the catacombs in Rome. Underneath the ground in Rome are miles of these secret passageways that lead to wherever. Well, the liver has a biliary system, and it takes these drugs and other things, infections, and dumps them into its version of the catacombs. It's called the bile ducts, and these ducts swing and move all this toxic fluid into your intestines, and you defecate it out at the end of the day. That, in short, is the liver. Now, listen to what can happen to the liver, and get the science, and get high on the science. Because one of my professed beliefs, and the more I study, the more I believe this, is that science has become a cult. The cult of science, almost in, what do you want to call it, retribution? I don't know what the right word for it is, but come on, think about it. How much science have you studied in your life that really isn't complicated, but it was just made complicated? And this has come back to bite us, truly, because as science determines our perception of reality, as it insists in its arrogance that it dictates what reality is, the reality of your health, certainly now. This is no joke here. Science, pharmaceutical science, the biochemistry of drugs, attempts to tell you the best way to take care of your health. And yet, if you investigate it, if you study it, you can see thousands of proofs for natural medicine, but you can't study it. You're not going to do what I do, generally, because the translation is too difficult. Science is written in a code. And that code, as far as I'm concerned, is at least partly intentional. Years ago, we laughed at Revenge of the Nerds. And all of you know the hazards and pains of getting to understand computer languages. Well, there's another sort of nerd out there. It's called the scientist. And he speaks in a language that, as far as I'm concerned, from studying enough of it, really just covers up his anger on other levels. Bizarre, huh? The truth, yes. And that's why you like the show, because I try to translate the science into a palatable form. You need that. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there looking at a man in a white coat pretending to be a scientist, which he is certainly not, telling you that science says that statin drugs are good. Science says that Coumadin will take you to the other side if you're concerned about a stroke. Science says so on and so forth, and it's the cult of science not really understanding itself anymore. So what happens to the cells of the liver? I'm going to give you six examples of it, and we'll break them down. This is fun. One thing it can do is go into the liver cell, which is called the hepatocyte, and it can covalently bind the drug to proteins inside the hepatocyte, inside the cell. Covalent binding of the drug to intracellular proteins causes a decrease in ATP levels, leading to actin disruption. Disassembly of the actin fibrils at the surface of the hepatocyte causes blebs and ruptures of the membrane. Right, you're already nauseous. You just don't want to listen to this. This is fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating if you can translate it. And I'm going to translate it. So let's say it again. Covalent binding of the drug to intracellular proteins, those are proteins inside the cell, causes a disruption and a decrease in ATP levels, leading to actin disruption, A-C-T-I-N. Disassembly of these actin fibrils at the surface of the liver cell causes blebs and ruptures the membrane. Let's break that down. Covalent binding of the drug. Covalent refers to the power of the bond. It means the drug comes in there and it just doesn't flatter and coerce and persuade relationships with the hepatocyte, binding relationships. Covalent binding means there are exchanges at the atomic level that the atoms are talking to the other atoms with very powerful new relationships made, bonds that are made. And these bonds do not break so easily. These are not ionic bonds. These are not hydrogen bonding. This is not van der Waals forces. These are connections that the drug makes to the hepatocyte, the liver cell, that are very difficult to break once they're made. And it goes inside the cell. The covalent binding to the proteins inside the cell causes a decrease in ATP levels. What's ATP? ATP is the currency of the cell. ATP is the dollars and cents of the cell. If your liver cell has 50 things to do, remember that liver cell is not just detoxing you, it's storing iron. That liver cell is making proteins, the albumin and the globulin that has to go out. That liver cell has hundreds of functions that are not just about detox. They're about how it fertilizes and stores. And the way the liver cell does these 1,200 to 1,400 jobs that it has, we count that many, is by making in the mitochondria of that liver cell ATP. ATP is dollars and cents. So covalent binding of the drug to proteins inside the cell, that's a powerful bond. That drug gets in there, it takes over, and it decreases the currency of the cell, leading to actin disruption. Actin is simply a fiber. It's a protein fiber. And those protein fibers, the hepatocyte is using to make what it's supposed to make. It's like the hepatocyte is a factory, and you feed it what it needs, and then it makes money, and it spends the money making structures. And when you get that drug in there, it stops then the production of those structures. If the hepatocyte is making little bricks so it can build a house somewhere, those bricks are no longer made because there's no money to pay for those bricks because the ATP is gone. And the person dictating this disruption has a powerful covalent ability, so to speak. And as all these bricks fall apart, as all this actin that you wanted to use to do something useful with falls apart, the cell knows it. The cell looks at these actin, these partially made bricks, these crumbling low-quality bricks that it can't really use to do what the liver is supposed to do. The liver looks at these lousy little bricks and says, get out of my house. So the bricks, the actin fibrils, get pushed to the surface or to the membrane of the cell. And as we're pushing out our garbage, what was once our important product is now our garbage. The liver cell is saying, I make bricks, and I don't like the looks of them, so it's garbage. So get out of the cell. So the liver cell then pushes these actin fibrils to the surface of the hepatocyte, causing blebs, B-L-E-B-S. A bleb is simply a, how would you call it? It's a sequestration, or it's a storage site. It's the cell surrounding this ugly looking brick and pushing it out. It's engulfing it. The cell will engulf its own garbage and push it out through the membrane. Now take that all the way back to the beginning. A powerful agent, something that can covalently bind to the inside of the cell, causing a decrease in the currency of the cell, the ATP levels, so that the bricks it makes, the actin, are low-grade, poor-quality bricks. And the cell sees it and starts pushing those low-quality bricks, those actin fibrils, to the edge of the cell, whereby the cell engulfs them as a bleb and pushes them out as the membrane of the hepatocyte ruptures. That's how some drugs destroy your liver. How about this one? Disruption of transport proteins. Drugs that affect the transport proteins at the canonicular membrane can interrupt bile flow. What does that mean? That means that there are drugs that interfere with these bile canaliculi. Bile canaliculi are microscopic passageways deep inside your liver. And those passageways, as we stated earlier, are exactly where the liver cell dumps its poisons. So how does a liver cell dump its poisons? The liver takes, like a vacuum, the drug into itself, intracellularly, does what it needs to do, and then takes the excretion within itself and pushes it out of the cell itself where it would die. So a liver cell has to be able to pull something in, take it apart, and spit it back out. Takes it in, denatures it, transaminates it. There's a million things it'll do to it. And then it's got to spit the excrement out or it will die in its own filth. And so it does. Where does it dump its filth? Into the bile ducts so you can defecate them out, right? Well, we have drugs then that go in and interrupt that journey from the liver cell to the bile duct. There's a transport mechanism there from the cell to the bile duct. And what we do is we take proteins, we call them transport proteins, and they bind to the excretion in the liver cell. So once we take the drug apart, what it's going to excrete, to get it out, we have to bind a transport protein to it. Well, certain drugs disrupt the transport protein. So if you had to get from Long Beach to Santa Monica, and what you were taking out of Long Beach was bad stuff, garbage, and you had to dump it into somewhere in the Santa Monica Bay, well, you take a cab, and that cab's your transport protein. Except what the drug does is it comes in and it breaks down the cab. So there's no way for the liver cell to get its garbage out into the bile duct. So we can covalently bind. That's an uppercut. Then that drug can disrupt transport proteins. That's a right cross. How about this one? Cytolytic T cell activation. Covalent binding. Again, a word you know now. Covalent bond is the most powerful bond in chemistry. Different than a positive-negative ionic bond. You understand this. Relationships in life are very pivotal and powerful, difficult to break once they're made. And then there are relationships that are trivial. At a moment's notice, you can change where you clean your car each week. That's a very weak bond. You didn't have a deep connection. But a husband and a wife, a father and a daughter, those are covalent bonds. And in cytolytic T cell activation, there's a covalent bonding of a drug to the P450 enzyme. Now, in the liver, in the hepatocyte, enzymes, and that's a whole other story, but there are enzymes that are famous. They do so much work. They take apart so many chemicals. And one of these enzymes, for short, is called P450. The P450 enzyme takes apart so many drugs, so many chemicals. And we have, out there in pharmaceutical land, drugs that you take that covalently bind, you understand that word now, to the P450 enzyme and act as an immunogen. An immunogen. I-M-M-U-N-O-G-E-N. An immunogen is like an antigen, which simply means that your immune system, remember, as the gazillion processes every second are occurring at the speed of light in your body, there is a patrol squad of millions of immune system cells watching that everything occurs correctly. They're the police force, the FBI, the CIA, the fire department, you name it. It's in your body. And they all work on varying levels for varying levels of emergency. And what happens with cytolytic T cell activation is the drug attaches to this very important enzyme, P450. And once the drug attaches to the enzyme, the immune system sees it and a flag goes off. All of a sudden, what was good for the body, which is the P450 enzyme, becomes bad for the body because it's attached to the drug. And the immune system, the police department, sees that and it blows its siren. And it activates T cells and cytokines, which are more immune system cells. So the police call in the FBI, call in the fire department. And that stimulates a multifaceted immune response. Wow. There's a quick jab. Cytolytic T cell activation. That good enzyme that helps the liver is bound to a drug, and now it becomes marked. And the police see it, blow a whistle, and now the FBI comes in, the CIA comes in, the fire department comes in, and this stimulates this massive inflammatory response. I know, some of you are laughing. You think this is funny. But you see, you won't really understand this unless it's translated. And really, you know in your social experience already how the body really works. And it should be explained that way. But it's not. It's explained dryly, which is why you didn't take your high school chemistry and your college biochemistry. Because, you see, it was written in a code. And that code was very difficult to translate. And so you didn't. And so now this great beast, this megalith called pharmaceutical chemistry, grows into the single most powerful telescope through which you are asked as an American citizen to view your reality. This is not a joke. You die from these mistakes every single day. And when you make that decision to take a different stance, in the end, you fall apart. You fall apart because you really don't understand. So number three, cytolytic T cell activation. It creates massive inflammation. You already know from my past shows, and if you haven't, get on the website, straighttalk.cc, and get the shows in the archive. Big changes on that website. If there's inflammation, there's fibrosis. So we just talked about inflammation, there's fibrosis. We just talked about cholestasis, which is blockage of the bile ducts. That's another form of inflammation. We just talked about disruption of the energy currency of the cell, ATP. There's a lot going on in the body. Here's number four. Apoptosis of hepatocytes. Apoptosis of hepatocytes. That means there's an intelligence in the cell. And when the cell sees itself being ravaged, becoming fibrotic, becoming ineffective, becoming an invalid, the cell has its own time bomb inside it. And once you initiate and trigger that time bomb, the cell just explodes. If you mess with the cell, the brain cell, the kidney cell, the liver cell. In this case, it's apoptosis of hepatocytes, of liver cells. If you mess with it enough, it will start to believe it's useless. It will start to believe it has no place in your liver. It'll start to believe that for the best of the rest of the body, for the well-being of the greater good of the entire liver, it should destroy itself. So you're out there on a lifeboat with eight people, and you realize that you're the problem because the team's not going to make it because you're sick. And so you throw yourself overboard. That's what your organ systems do. Activation of apoptotic pathways by the tumor necrosis factor may trigger a cascade of intracellular capsaices, which result in programmed cell death. That's the technical language. And lots of disease is like this. This is why the herbs don't work so well for lots and lots of illnesses. Because once the cells, the brain cells, the kidney cells, the liver cells, have sent each other messages, and those messages are saying, there's so much death here. There's so much dismemberment. There's so much chaos. There's so much apocalypse. For the greater good, we need to just die off in chunks. And once you initiate a cascade like that, it's very difficult to stop that cascade. You got to understand apoptosis. This is why sometimes doctors give drugs that cost benefit, will in the long run kill you. They'll put you in renal failure. They'll put you in liver failure, which may not mean you shouldn't take them. Yes, I said that. You may have 5 years to live on the drug or 6 months to live without the drug. And so sometimes you have to make a very difficult cost-benefit analysis. But if I were to say to you, now that your understanding is deeper, if I were to say to you that if we could work off the bad part of the drug and let you benefit from the good part of the drug, then couldn't we get the best of both worlds? And how are you going to understand that? How is your MD going to understand that if he doesn't understand his own pharmacology, which he really doesn't? I assure you he doesn't. They don't study this in medical school. They study it in pharmaceutical chemistry, but then they overlook it. So you have to take a PhD in hard science, molecular bio, cell bio, biochemistry, to really understand what these things mean. And then you have to understand natural medicine to understand what those things mean. And sometimes I would offer you this, if you would deepen your own understanding, that the good part of a pharmaceutical drug could be balanced by the good part of the herb so that the bad part of the pharmaceutical drug would affect you less. It's not what drugs do that's the problem. It's the consequence of taking them. And this is what we call the side effect. The side effect is simply a message from your body that, hey, you may have less pain, but you just broke your hip. Hey, you have less pain when you took that steroid, but now all your joints ache because you're losing all your bone density. So you have to think of drugs differently, and that's the beauty of this show today. Drugs do good things. When doctors say they do good things, the doctors are not mistaken. But in the pharmacology, in the pathophys of the drug, they break the cells down in weird ways that are going to cost you on a million other levels. And this is why you have to look at your drugs as cost-benefit. Now, that's interesting to me. I think that's interesting to you. I think that's interesting in general. I think watching a cell fall under the weight of a heavy drug and watching a cell then put itself back together under the weight of a heavy drug is a fascinating process. Mitochondrial disruption. The mitochondria. Mitochondria is a part of the cell, which, by the way, check this out. This will fascinate you. The mitochondria, where we make the ATP, which is the currency of the cell. Do you know that the mitochondria came into the cell billions of years ago as basically a bacteria? The DNA sequences in the mitochondria of the cell are different than the cell itself. It means that whatever gave us this organelle in the cell, this vital organelle in the cell that enhanced and evolved us, came into the cell from the outside as a foreigner, as an outsider, as something that didn't evolve indigenously to the cell itself. It came from the outside. We know this because when we study the DNA sequences, it's alarming that they have nothing to do with the other sequences in the body itself. So this mitochondria that produces this ATP is a foreigner. And certain drugs inhibit mitochondrial function by the dual effect of both beta oxidation energy production, we won't get into that, but by inhibiting the synthesis of nicotinamide, adenine dinucleotide, and flavine adenine dinucleotide. Those are your B vitamins. Your B vitamins, resulting in decreased ATP production. So now we have another drug that goes in and prevents us from making our B vitamins. Wow. So how come when drugs are given to you, doctors don't say, make sure you take this drug with vitamin B3, vitamin B2? Did you know the birth control pill disrupts the production of vitamin B6? Do you know that many drugs stop methylation of the B vitamins in the liver? And if you're taking the birth control pill, you've got to be taking methylated B vitamins. If you're taking the birth control pill, you've got to take vitamin B6 in absorbable high methylated dosages. And there's dozens of drugs like that. Which is all the more reason to suggest to you that maybe the drug you're on isn't affecting you negatively because what the drug does, it's affecting you because you're not getting the nourishment to balance and counter the side effect of the drug. Different perception. What people do is they shiz them off into black and white on this topic. I don't take drugs under any circumstances. Or I take drugs and I do what my doctor says, and all that natural medicine and herbal medicine and take care of yourself with higher nutrition is a lot of baloney. And if you just looked at the way the body worked, you'd see that there was the potential for a perfect integration so many times. Drugs thicken the blood. Why do drugs thicken the blood? Somebody out there tell me why drugs thicken the blood. They thicken the blood because they're pro-inflammatory. And the minute you have inflammation, because any system is disrupted in any organ, that inflammation results in the laying down of fibrin. And fibrin is your pre-clot. It's your pre-thrombosis protein. But you're not going to get a clot. You're not going to have a stroke. What you're going to do is just get blood that's too thick. It's hypercoagulable. And in that it's too thick or hypercoagulable, you're just not going to feel right. There are other systems of medicine that honor blood stasis. Chinese medicine honors blood stasis. Ayurvedic medicine honors blood stasis. Old European medicine, way back in the Middle Ages, understood blood stasis. The American Indian understood blood stasis. Everybody, if you go back before pharmaceutical medicine, understood blood stasis. What do you think we were leeching people for 200, 300 years ago? And with success. Leeches, as gross as it sounds today, were fantastic debriding mechanisms. A leech would go into a wound, and it would eat all the dead tissue. And that dead tissue was sustaining the infection. So the leech was an anti-infective mechanism. We understood so much about hypercoagulability of blood that we'd use a leech to suck out the black blood, the dark, toxic blood. There's no illness that doesn't begin before the illness became an illness with the thickening and the increase in the coagulation of the blood. Any pathologist, if they were worth their salt, would assemble around a table, perhaps not in the place they worked, because these views are verboten. These views are considered heresy, unfortunately. But outside their academic walls, outside the places they work, there's no pathologist that wouldn't agree that before you get the symptom, before you get the disease, you have to have the beginning of an inflammatory process. And an inflammatory process will imply stasis or thickening of blood. And all these wonderful herbs are blood thinners. Well, we know that in pharmacology. Why are we giving everyone Coumadin? So, we have covalent binding to cause the protein, the BRICS, to develop atypically or with poor quality, and the cell throws them out. The proteins that transport the poisons from the liver cell to the bile duct, those transport proteins are destroyed. We bind to the P450 enzyme, and that stimulates an alarm response, and every immune system cell floods into the hepatocyte and inflames it with all the consequences. We have apoptosis of the hepatocyte, meaning the hepatocyte looks at itself and sees how damaged it is and begs, okay, for its own annihilation. We have the mitochondria that makes the B vitamins inhibited so that you don't have B vitamins. And then, of course, the skin, the inner skin of the bile duct. If you go inside the tube that we call a bile duct, the inner tube of that is made of cells. Is it smooth? Is it velvety? Does it feel rough like sandpaper? It all depends on which cell lines the inner tube of the bile duct. And we have toxic metabolites of the drug cause injury to the bile duct epithelium, meaning the inner lining of the very canal that takes out the poison through the bile. The inner lining of that canal is loaded with a cell, an epithelial cell, just like the inner lining of your intestinal tract are epithelial cells. And the inner lining of these tubes, the epithelium, can also fibrose, which means your bile ducts fibrose. When the bile canaliculi, the tiny bile ducts, fibrose way high deep in the liver, your coffee enemas don't work anymore. When the bile epithelium way up high in the liver, in the microscopic bile canaliculi, when they fibrose, you're going to have to do a whole lot of olive oil flushes to begin to move out the granulation and the fibrosis there. And once they fibrose, once you have congestion there, don't you think that the opportunistic step then is infection with fibrosis? Because of inflammation, you will start to develop infection. One bad guy talks to another bad guy, talks to a third bad guy. It's called negative reciprocity. Negative reciprocity. You know this. Your business, your private business, your workplace is all built on positive reciprocity or negative reciprocity. One rotten apple spoils the whole bunch. What does that mean? It means one bad person in a group can start to reciprocate negatively, and it starts to pass on down the line. So you have a negative vibration on the overall rather than a positive one. Any living, dynamic biofield will do this, whether it's groups of people, groups of animals, or groups of cells, or groups of cells in response to groups of infections. Now, there you go. That's just six things that drugs do to the liver. Wow. That's massive. And which drug does what to who? Well, that's another show, and it's not really appropriate for the radio. Perhaps not. Give me a little time. We may change our mind about that. But right now, the point is, you get the point. There really is a process. A process in the hard science. And what about the kidney? I'm going to do 6 or 7 minutes on the kidney. And then we'll try to get to some practical stuff. Because this isn't practical, right? I hope you're not agreeing with me. You see, this is what too many people laugh off as theory. It is not theory. It is gospel. It is the gospel of science asking you to change the way you approach your world. And that is not trivia then. It's trivia when it's boring. It's trivia when it's not real. It's trivia when it's not explained well, so people who sit in armchairs can look down upon the masses and simply say, you're stupid because you can't understand this. And to ensure that self-fulfilling prophecy, we're not going to explain it to you. We're going to teach science as a needle in a haystack, rather than science as easily understood by reasonably passionate, reasonably intelligent people. That is your right, and you are being denied that right. Perhaps we're doing this with our government. Perhaps it's not just pharmaceutical medicine. Perhaps when you sit down at night and think the world's going crazy, it's because you're not exerting your right. Well, this is one forte of it. It's called the drugs you take that you may need and may not need. And you have to exalt the beauty of the human body and the way it really works. So there's a little bit on the liver. Now let's get to the kidney. Again, the kidney's simple. It's a relatively simple organ. The liver takes out your fat-soluble poisons. Does other things too, but we'll just talk about that. Some of your drugs are lipophilic, meaning they bind with fat. And that's where they get taken out, through the liver. Now, some of your drugs are water-soluble. If a drug is not fat-soluble, the liver is not going to take it out. The kidney does, but the kidney goes through its own form of torture. And you have to understand that too. Of the two, what do you want? Fibrosis in the liver or fibrosis in the kidney? Take fibrosis in the liver any day of the week. Somebody tell me why I'm saying that, please. Why, if I had a choice, if somebody said to me, Medici, you have a very toxic drug to the liver, or you have a very toxic drug to the kidney, which one would I pick if I had the choice? I'd always pick the liver, because the liver has an ability to regenerate itself that the kidney wishes it had. That's right. The organs did not evolve with equanimity. The heart is precocious. The heart is always shooting its mouth off at the sound of anything, the buzzing of an insect, and you get heart palpitations. The heart is precocious. The liver is the bulldog. The liver is the runt. The liver is the pit bull. The liver is the animal with the huge adrenal glands that you can beat over the head day in and day out, and it just keeps coming back. In fact, you can cut out a piece of it and it will regrow itself. The liver cell is unbelievably regenerative. The liver cell will restore itself. The kidney wishes it had that sustainability. Don't burn out your kidneys. Hit your liver, not your kidneys. And here's a little fun fact. What happens if you have a drug that can get pushed out through the liver or the kidney? It's lipophilic, and it's also water-soluble, hydrophilic, meaning some drugs can go out either way, or parts go out one way and parts go out the other. Suppose you have a drug that would like to go out the liver. It could go out the kidney, but your bile ducts are all plugged up because of all the other drugs you do. Where's that drug going to go? Well, it's going to go to the kidney even though it doesn't want to. And the kidney's going to handle it even though it doesn't want to. You see the point? Oh, those gallbladder flushes, I'm not quite sure why I'm doing them. My doctor didn't tell me they were important. He doesn't believe that the bile ducts can become scarred and inflamed and granulated. There's so many bile ducts, just a few million won't matter. Guys, do you get it? Look at that. Look at the stupidity and ignorance of people not understanding, healthcare practitioners not really understanding how the body really works. If the bile ducts are plugged, if they're congested, and you are taking multiple pharmaceutical drugs, the side effect of those drugs will become a reality. There's a much greater chance, because now you had to shift all the excretion from the liver to the kidney, and the kidney could do it, but does it really want to do it? That's big. See, if you take the time to piece it together, then what happens to the kidney? A few facts on the kidney. They account for less than 1% of your body weight, yet receive 20% of the cardiac output. Let me say that again without slurring. Excuse me. The kidney accounts for less than 1% of the body weight, yet they get about 20% of the cardiac output. Wow. That means they're busy. They're really busy. And the kidney divides into two areas. Area one is the glomerulus, which is this bed of capillaries that's part of your bloodstream. And really, everything, every water-soluble toxin like creatinine that your body makes, or uric acid that your body makes, or the heavy metals that you ingest from the outside that go out through the kidney, say. Anything coming out through the kidney, all the metabolites of these drugs that are water-soluble, the glomerulus will pull out, send into the renal tubules, and the tubules will decide what to throw back in or excrete out through the urine. So the kidney, in a nutshell, is a two-part system. First of all, the cell is called the nephron, just like the liver cell is called the hepatocyte. But the nephron is two parts. It's the glomerulus, which is this big capillary bed. And it just sucks out. It sucks out all the garbage from the blood that's water-soluble, meaning that mixes with water. Sound familiar? Sure. You've got the liver and the hepatocyte doing the same thing to more fat-soluble poisons. So the glomerulus sucks out the water-soluble poisons, ultimately dumps them into these things called the renal tubules. Sound familiar? It's the bile ducts. The renal tubules are like the bile ducts of the body, only they're in the kidney. And the tubules are interesting because they will throw back into the circulation what slipped through that should go back. They kind of make the end chain decision and throw out all the garbage. So that's a two-part process in the nephron in the kidney cell. Now, here's what's fascinating. The glomerulus, okay, has a structure called a podocyte. A podocyte, P-O-D-O-cyte. A podocyte looks like an amoeba. And off the amoeba, this is a structure in the kidney, in the glomerulus. In this amoeboid cell called a podocyte, there's a foot that comes off it, like the hand or the foot of an amoeba. It's something like a peninsula that shoots out from the blob called the podocyte. And this hand on the podocyte, it wraps itself around the microscopic capillaries in the glomerulus. So in the kidney, coming off your big blood vessels, is this microscopic bed of capillaries, teeny-weeny blood cells, blood vessels. And the hand, millions of hands coming off a part of the kidney called the podocyte. And the podocyte wraps its hand around these microscopic capillaries. And in that wrapping of the hand of the podocyte is an exchange between the water-soluble toxin in the blood and the kidney. The kidney grabs the poison through the podocyte. Now, we know, and we have this down to science, and much science on top of that science, all under the microscope, we know that there's something called, well, we call it many things, but some group of scientists are going to call it a minimal change disease. We have a situation where if in a moment we took out your podocyte, your kidney cell, and your capillary, and we looked at it under a microscope, we would see the podocyte disappear. In other words, the hand that comes out to wrap itself around the capillary. If you inflame it enough, if you torture it enough, if you annoy it enough, the podocyte will not come out. I'm going to make an analogy. Those little snails on your stairs when you come home in the rain that you try not to step on. You put the flashlight on those little snails, or you see them in the day. And just out of curiosity, you touch their antennas. That antenna is a podocyte. You see the way that antenna retracts the minute you touch it? Do you see how the snail uses it to navigate itself? Because snails, they don't really have big eyes, right? But they know their way with these antennas. And if you just tap that antenna, you see how fast it retracts? That's a podocyte. Think of that snail's antenna wrapped around millions of capillaries, sucking the poisons out of the blood. If you inflame, if you torture that podocyte enough, we will see on histological analysis. In other words, a pathologist will take out that glomerulus, look at the podocyte, and instead of seeing a podocyte, you'll simply see a blunted, a demented, a dwarfed, a torn up, a useless podocyte. You'll see an antenna that's not working as an antenna anymore. You'll see an antenna that's got scars around it. You'll see an antenna that definitely doesn't diffuse across the membrane of the capillary into the podocyte, into the kidney. You'll see a scarring membrane there that prevents what? Prevents the removal of the poison from the blood. You know what we call that? Well, some people call it minimal change disease. Minimum change disease, MCD. I'm going to talk about MCD. Big words for you're starting to fade in the kidney. Is that renal disease? No. It's not renal disease. Does it make you feel bad? Yes. Bad in a way that you can go to your doctor and your doctor's going to tell you, well, Mrs. Smith, you're on 6 drugs. 4 of them are from blood pressure. It starts to create minimal change disease in the podocyte of your glomerulus, and that's why your ears are ringing or your low back hurts or your knees ache. No, you will never hear this. They don't study it. Do you think they study these things? Not your medical doctors. Look at your medical school curriculums. Pharmacology is about what does the drug do, how does it work, and what are the side effects that can kill a patient that you have to be aware of. That's what they study. They don't study all the ways the drugs interact so that ultimately you are rendered sick, toxic, acidic, useless, and on your way to a disease that's not directly related to any one drug, but that's produced as a function of all the other drugs. Do you get that? You get my vote if you get that. You can get that. Tell your friends about this show. There is no show like this in the United States of America today. You do not hit the airways with a show like this. This is a 100% no-sell educational show that I have the privilege of giving to you. And if you do your share, as I've done my share, and all you got to do is show up and listen. Get on the website and listen again. Your life will change. You will stop suffering from the multitude of illnesses you suffer from and symptoms secondary to drug abuse, etc. You will stop doing these things, and you will start providing perspectives in the function of your life that have power. But if you're sitting there listening going, what herb should I take because my kidneys don't feel good? You're listening to the wrong show. And you're not thinking clearly. Because if it were that simple, then we could all do as many pharmaceutical drugs as we wanted and stay disease-free and not have side effects. You have to mobilize your intelligence, the depth of your intelligence, so you can really understand how to navigate yourself, whether you have to take these drugs or you don't have to take these drugs. That is the point of this show, and I pray that I'm getting through. So, don't expect your doctor at Kaiser to tell you that you have MCD, minimal change disease. But rest assured, if you are on drugs consistently that give you any issues with kidney toxicity, you're approaching MCD. You certainly are. That's all I can say on the show about that. Now, I'll give you another beautiful, beautiful example of how the kidneys get destroyed. There's a compound in a drug called chloroquine. Chloroquine. Okay? And then there's one that's similar called hydroxychloroquine. And they're, believe it or not, anti-malarial drugs, but that we give to people with rheumatic disorders, autoimmune disorders, and also lupus, which is another autoimmune issue that's not really about the joint. But your autoimmune diseases that affect the joints, including lupus, we give chloroquine to. Now, what chloroquine does is create lipid inclusions. Lipid inclusions. Chloroquine creates mounds of fat inside the kidney cells. And those mounds of fat, once they granulate, once they become hard, interfere with the cell function in the kidney. Lipid inclusions create a very powerful argument from the ingestion of large quantities of raw fat. All the essential fatty acids will be absorbed by the cell and used to clean out the lipid inclusions within the cell that are toxic. It's called fat exchange. And years ago, we discovered that the body has a brilliant way of repairing fat-soluble damage to its tissue, whether it's nerve tissue or intracellular tissue. But you can't exchange it out unless you feed it fresh, raw fat. This is one of the fundamentals of getting on the other side of recreational drug problems. And next week, we're going to bring in techniques, specific techniques. I'm going to get off theory, and I'm going to get very specifically into what to do in the practicum of your life when you're trying to get off recreational drug abuse. First, you shouldn't be doing it, of course, because it's illegal. But if this is something of the past and you still feel the effect of it, there are physical things to do. Do this, do this, do this, do this. But you're not going to do them if you don't understand how crystal meth and marijuana and all of it get into your body. Wonderful show. Dr. Vincent Medici, get to the website, straighttalk.cc. We'll see you next week.
With Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.